Roll call for Wednesday, January 26th. Barnard? Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Christensen?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
Dockstader?
Here.
Driscoll?
Here.
Emmerich?
Here.
Esquibel? Geis?
Here.
Hastert?
Here.
Hicks?
Here.
Hines?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Johnson?
Excused.
Landon?
Here.
Martin?
Here.
Meyer?
Here.
Nicholas?
Here.
Nutting?
Here.
Perkins?
Here.
Peterson?
Here.
Ross?
Here.
Rothfuss?
Here.
Schiffer?
Here.
Scott?
Here.
Von Flatern?
Here.
President Anderson?
Here.
Barnard? 29 present, 1 excused.
Prayer by Father Gartelos.
Mr. President, again, and Senators, thank you for the honor of being here and for joining together
in prayer again this morning. Eternal God, guide us all with your wisdom and love that we may live our lives with dignity and honor. By your grace, illuminate our path that we may diligently fulfill the duties entrusted to us for the well-being of the people of this great state. We pause to thank you for sustaining our state from generation to generation in prosperity and in adversity. We offer our praise to you for this year, for this Senate, and ask for your guidance and your wisdom. In you we find infinite possibilities and ask that our sincere prayer lead to determined action for the benefit of all. Bring and sustain peace in this chamber that wisdom may triumph. As we look upon the responsibilities that lay before us, grant us wisdom to make good decisions, the strength to do what is right, and the satisfaction of offering our service to the best of our abilities for this great state. Amen.
Join me in pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Reading clerk, please read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. President, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of January the 25th, 2011, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Are there any objections? Being none, the report has been adopted. We don't have a doctor for the day, but we do have several nurses. Connie Jacobson, nurse coroner from Casper. And on this day in history in Wyoming, 1922, the Evanston Chinese Joe's house was destroyed by fire. In 1875, on this day in U.S. history, George Green of Michigan patented the electric dental drill for sawing, filing, dressing, and polishing of teeth. Messages from the House. Oh, I'm sorry. Good morning, Mr. or Dr.
May I have privilege of the floor for just a moment?
Yes.
I was just going to ask you, I was just curious, that it's the first time I knew that we'd ever had a coroner come for physician or nurse of the day, and I was just wondering if there was some implication in there. I noticed there was only 29 of us here, but is there any announcement or anything in that regard?
Let's don't make any dangerous assumptions. All right, with that, could we have the messages from the House?
From the House of Representatives, January the 25th, 2011. Message number 146, Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 46, Campaign Funds, Personal Use. Ayes 24, noes 34, excused 2. From the House of Representatives, message number 147, January the 25th, 2011. Committee of the Whole indefinitely postponed. Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report failing the bill listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 118, Abortion, Available Information for Decision. Ayes 23, noes 32, excuse 5. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Introduction, reading, and references of bills. Senate File 144, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 144, State-Funded Construction Projects Preference Provisions and Act Relating to Administration of Government, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
Senate File 144 has been referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Senate File 140, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 140, Kindergarten Attendance, an Act Relating to Education, sponsored by Senator Barnard.
Senate File 140 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate File 146, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 146, Teacher Accountability Act, an Act Relating to Teacher Contracts, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
Senate File 146 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Senate Joint Resolution 7.
Senate Joint Resolution, Bark Beetle Mitigation, a joint resolution requesting Congress, state, and local authorities to take action to mitigate damages caused by bark beetles and to prevent future damages and epidemics, sponsored by Senator Dockstader.
Senate Joint Resolution 7 has been referred to Committee Number 4, Agriculture. I'm sorry, Committee 5. Senate Joint Resolution Number 7 has been referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. Senate File 148, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 148, Game and Fish Collection of Social Security Numbers, an Act Relating to Game and Fish, sponsored by Senator Dockstader.
Senate File 148 has been referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. Senate File 141, first reading of the bill.
Senate File 141, Constitutional Instruction for Officials 2, an Act Relating to Constitutional Instruction for Specified Officials and Other Persons, sponsored by Senator Jennings.
Senate File 141 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 147, first reading of the bill.
147, Senate File 147, Service of Process Fees, an Act Relating to County Sheriffs, sponsored by Senator Dockstader.
Senate File 147 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 150, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 150, Notaries, an Act Relating to Notaries, sponsored by Senator Nicholas.
Senate File 150 has been referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate Joint Resolution 4.
Senate Joint Resolution 4, Constitutional Instruction for Elected and Other Persons, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution by adding a requirement that specified officials and other persons receive specified constitutional instruction. Sponsored by Senator Jennings.
Senate Joint Resolution 4 has been assigned to Committee Number 7, Corporations. Senate File 143, first reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 143, Federal Natural Resource Policy and Act Relating to Public Funds, sponsored by Senator Bebout.
Senate File 143 has been referred to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Senate File 139.
Senate File 139, Healthcare Pilot Project Amendments and Act Relating to the Healthy Frontiers Healthcare Reform Demonstration Project, sponsored by Senator Scott.
Senate File 139 has been referred to Committee Number 10, Labor. Senator Hines.
Mr. President, Senate File 93, which was read in yesterday afternoon, noon, had an appropriation and need to be re-referred to Committee Number 2.
Thank you. Senate File 93 being re-referred to Committee Number 2. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Any other re-referrals or business in regard to reference of bills? Bills on second reading. Senate File 9, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 9, Economic Analysis, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 9, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 22, second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 22, Wind Energy Property Rights, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee.
There is an amendment that is the Bebout Amendment, second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 22. Senator Bebout, would you like to move and address the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Would the reading clerk please read the amendment?
Senate File 22, second reading amendment number 1, page 6, line 10.
Mr. President?
Yes, Senator Bebout.
Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 22. And when I looked at this bill yesterday, members of the Senate, under 3427107, it deals with reversions of the easement to the surface owners, and I wanted to be sure that there was no liability associated with that reversion. And so the purpose of this amendment, Mr. President, is, as it states, reversion of an interest under this section does not transfer any obligation to restore or reclaim the surface estate. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Questions of the sponsor? Comments? Seeing none, the question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 22. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Bebout? No. Back, Senate File 22, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, is so ordered. Senate File 33, the second reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 33, State Parks, Acquisition of Land, sponsored by the Travel Committee.
There are no amendments. Senate File 33, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 37, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 37, Health Insurance Definitions, sponsored by Senator Emmerich.
There are no amendments. Senate File 37, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 68, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 68, Summary Probate Amendment, sponsored by Senator Ross.
There are no amendments. Senate File 68, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 88, Second reading of the bill, of the Senate file.
Senate File 88, Expungement of Nonviolent Felonies, sponsored by Senator Burns.
There is an amendment. It's the Meyer Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read that amendment number one in at this time, please.
Senate File 88, Second Reading Amendment number one, page 2, line 8.
Senator Meyer, would you like to move and address this amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 88 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. There was a concern, I think, from at least one member of the body and perhaps more that what the definition of program was. I wanted to make sure that it included restitution, and this has to do in these areas where I think what we were getting at is we didn't want to let people off the hook if they had, or somebody like a famous Wall Street embezzler that happened to really tag people here in Wyoming for a great amount of money, and they hadn't paid that debt to society. We want to make sure if these people do have their records expunged that all debts are paid back to society, including in these large fraud cases, any monies that would be owed to the people that were damaged. And that comes into play when the court orders a restitution of the victims. And so I wanted to make sure that all the debts were paid, not only any programs in any time, in any probation or parole, but the restitution back to the victims. And so we add the word restitution to clear up any ambiguity.
Any questions or comments regarding this amendment number one on second reading to the Senate File 88? All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. There is a second amendment, that being the Scott Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in the second amendment to Senate Files 88 at this time.
Senate File 88, second reading amendment number two, page 5, line 7.
Senator Scott, would you like to move and address that amendment?
Mr. President, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. President, this amendment is consistent with the spirit of this bill. We're trying to get the results of these convictions dealt with, and one of the things that happens that causes problems is to enter quite a number of the occupations in this state. You have to answer questions, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And somebody who they've been convicted, the conviction has been expunged as per this bill, how should they answer that question? And you have an uncertainty, I think, on the part of the individual. And what this does is clear it up. It says the court informed the petitioner in writing. If he's asked whether he's not been convicted, he should answer no, unless he's convicted of some other felony. That gives clear instruction. It gives the individual involved a piece of paper. If somebody else says, wait a minute, you said you hadn't been convicted of felony, and we know it may be expunged. We can't find the record, but we know you were. It gives him something he can rely on. I think it helps this bill achieve the objectives that it is serving and keeps the consequences from some of these nonviolent felonies after they've been expunged from continuing to haunt the individual involved. So that's what the amendment does. The courts may issue this kind of instruction anyhow, but this makes it very clear that they have to and that they have to tell them in writing. That's the long and the short of the amendment. Mr. President, I urge its adoption.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I like this bill very much. I like the fact that people that are convicted of a felony can put it behind them and move forward. But I'm really not sure that I like this amendment because there's kind of a twisty kind of piece to this amendment that the court may instruct someone that they have to say no, but that's not true. They were convicted. It was expunged. And, you know, that part just bothers me.
I would suggest that a better way for this us to do it as a legislature is to have a requirement for all the boards and commissions that are under the law, all the things that the privileges that the state grants, that the application form or the box be checked to say, have you ever been convicted of a felony in which the record has not been expunged, or some kind of perhaps better language. And they can check that, and we can move forward truthfully. Because this will affect private employers. They'll have to, you know, they'll be interviewing people, and the court will have instructed the person to say no. And they'll have to honor that, because that's what the courts told them. That's not quite the way it ought to be. I'd rather know the facts. Yes, you were convicted, but yes, we have evaluated, and you have been had the opportunity to put that behind you. But that's up to a private employer to decide whether they want to do that or not, and with the information that's on the form. This means they won't have the information.
Senator Nicholas, still on the amendment?
President, and I'd urge you to defeat this amendment. These questions are presented in many instances. It's pretty common. In fact, if you've had a son or daughter that's been charged with a crime, and the offenses were dropped, there are many federal school applications where you're asked not have you been convicted, but have you been charged with a crime. So, and there are other instances where when you read the federal document, the college document, or something from around the nation, you have to study the language. And you have to truthfully answer the question. And while we might be able to say within the state of Wyoming, an expungement is the equivalent of never having been charged, and on any state document, you can answer this and be truthful. If it's a document from another state, if it's a federal document, if you're asked, have you been convicted? And you've been convicted, there's only one answer, yes. You can go on to explain it. We can say for boards and commissions for the state of Wyoming, when I was in the Attorney General's office as a many, many years ago, people applying for boards and commissions. One was the state banking examiner was interviewing a prominent citizen, and he had a charge that went back when he was in college. And the issue was, will that disqualify him under law, and what's the effect of expungement? We had to then go in and say, well, what does federal law say? But I submit to you, you're going to, if you give people this advice, they could find themselves being charged with a new crime on a federal application. So expungement doesn't allow you to say no. You're required to say yes, but it's been expunged.
Any other questions or comments in regard to this amendment? Senator Burns?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I hesitantly stand up and talk to argue with an attorney about this, but the fact is, in the bill, and if it becomes law, the law is that the court will seal the document. So there is no record of that conviction on the felony. And so, therefore, if the judge does order them to say they've not been convicted, that is because that's the judge who is also sealing that conviction in the first place.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. And I've meant to explain. Sealing the record does not expunge the DCI records or the police records. And if you have a son or daughter that gets convicted and you get a crime or even a DUI or a drinking violation in Laramie, and it gets on the police blotter, there's no way to expunge that record. It's there forever until the record gets destroyed. So you expunge this. And then the person, you write your application, say you want to go on a bank board, and you say, I've never been convicted. They go do a DCI check. They will find the record. It's only expunged for in the court file. But any other records out there, you can't expunge. They exist forever.
Other comments and questions? Go ahead. Your second time, Senator Burns.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, not actually honor for, just a point of information. I'm curious. If a convicted felon has been pardoned by the governor, is that, in fact, on the record or not on the record? I'm just curious. I don't know.
Senator Scott, your second time. Is there anyone else who would like to raise before Senator Scott takes his? Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, I thought I was pretty clear on this bill, but now I'm confused.
We are on
the amendment. What good is it to have an expungement, it being expunged or whatever, if you can't say, what good is it to, if we don't aren't able to say no to the that we had a felony on us?
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I'm not sure how this relates, but on expungement or on a violation that's been forgotten, I remember a situation that, if I'm not mistaken, a person with a DUI some years in the past forgot to admit to having had a DUI when he was going to Canada. And when they rechecked his application or whatever information, whatever documents needed to sign to go into Canada, he was found to have falsified his document, and he was denied admission into Canada because of having had a DUI some years back, and the individual had forgotten to mention that. You know, so I don't know how this would interrelate with this, but I can see where it could create some big problems.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Back to the good senator from Casper. It's one thing to have it expunged on the paper, but the big deal is you get your rights back. And to me, that's the core of this bill, is for those people that have, over something that was pretty minor in their youth, to stop them from being able to carry a firearm and the other things that go with the felony. That's the heart of this law.
Senator Case and then Senator Perkins, I believe.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Senator Case, I do believe this is your second time, too. Go ahead, Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just would note that the previous speaker was Senator Perkins. But I'll adopt his testimony, I think. But Mr. President, the one thing that we can do is that with these people's relationship to state government and all the privileges that we have and all the boards and commissions and all the applications that are required by law, we can clearly make it that no longer are they barred because of a conviction of a felony. Doesn't mean the felony conviction didn't occur, but we can, you know, we can grant them privileges to be all the occupations and professions. We can do everything. What would be wrong, I think, is the leap forward in where people go on issues outside of government, such as a private application for employment. It would be wrong to instruct them to lie. And, you know, that's a matter for private parties to work out and evaluate based on the facts. And so I think we should focus on the privileges that government grants and the state of Wyoming grants and make them unencumbered when a felony conviction is expunged in this manner.
Any others? Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I guess when all is in doubt, go to the Internet and search expungement. In under fine law, legal effects of expungement. It says, for example, when filling out an application for a job or an apartment, an applicant whose arrest or conviction has been expunged does not need to disclose that arrest or conviction. So that's what other states are doing. That's in fine law. You can see, do a criminal record expungement basics, criminal law. And so that's what it says is the legal effect of expungement. I think that's what this amendment does. I think that perhaps before now in third reading, whether this passes or fails, we need to find out what other jurisdictions are doing and actually find out what that effect is. But that's what this quick search does. Find law.
Anyone else before Senator Scott takes his final shot? Senator Scott?
Well, Mr. President, vote it up or vote it down. You've heard the debate. You've heard the arguments. Frankly, I find the previous speaker to be fairly persuasive. But I think what we've learned here, Mr. President, we know we're getting quite a problem. And we're getting quite a problem in the employment area where we've made so many things felonies that a single misjudgment can wreak havoc on the rest of an individual's life, and that punishment, Mr. President, does not fit the crime. We need to do something with the consequences of our tendency to make everything a felony so that we rein the system in. This bill is a step in the right direction. I think the amendment, put it on or put it off, we need to do a little further work on the legal consequences. I think this amendment's a good step, but it may be one step too far. We need to investigate that. I think we'd be better off putting it on and then investigating, but we can do it either way. But I think there's need for considerable more creative work in this area, because we can restore the gun rights, we can restore the other civil rights fairly simply with this bill. The employment, the barring from occupations that are causing our corrections department director to come tell us we got a real problem in that we're driving people to a life of crime by closing off so much of the rest of the employment possibilities. We need to do some further work on that, Mr. President. This bill is just a first step, and this amendment is just a part of that first step.
Question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 88. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
That amendment has failed. We're now back on the bill. There are no other amendments. Senate File 88, having been read two separate... Senator Christensen.
Mr. Chairman, if I'm doing this right, privilege the floor regarding a statement I made yesterday and new information, if I may.
Is it in regard to Senate File 88?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, yesterday I raised some points and concerns based on the county that I reside in most of the year. And I had a phone call this morning from our county attorney, and he was very appreciative of those points that I raised and said thank you. However, he praised the senator who brought this bill and said that those issues that I raised were not as significant as we may have perceived. And so he took his hat off and recognized the good work that the senator bringing this bill presented.
Thank you, Senator Christensen. We'll take compliments at any time. All right. Question being called. Senate File 88, having been read two separate times, the question is, Shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it is so ordered. Senate File 100, second reading of the bill.
Senate File 100, Cruelty to Animals, sponsored by Senator Geis.
There is an amendment. It's the Emmerich Amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read in this amendment at this time.
Senate File 100, second reading amendment number 1, page 4, line 16.
Senator Emmerich, would you like to move and address this amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the amendment to the second or the standing committee second reading amendment to Senate File 100. What this amendment does is to clarify some language that was brought to my attention yesterday. Page 4, line 16, the term puppy mill, and I don't like the term puppy mill, but I think I have to define it and insert the word substandard commercial pet facility. The other substantial amendment would be on page 4, line 23, that after animals delete and insert, including failing to provide proper food, drink, protection from the weather, or veterinary care. These amendments will please some and will disappoint others, and the point of this bill is to move forward with a determination of what is indeed cruelty in small animals. Perhaps it's not the finest at this stage, but I would urge the passage of this amendment.
Any questions or comments regarding this amendment? Question being called. The question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 100. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. There are no other amendments. Is there any discussion now that we're back on the bill? Seeing none, Senate File 100 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 116, second reading of the Senate file.
116, Oil and Gas Enhanced Recovery Microbial Conversions, sponsored by Senator Jennings.
There is an amendment on this, and it's the Schiffer Amendment. I'd ask that the reading clerk read in that amendment at this time.
Senate File 16, second reading amendment number 1, page 3, line 3.
Senator Schiffer, would you like to move this amendment and talk about it, please?
And adds in that the Oil and Gas Commission is holding, if the permitting process goes through the Oil and Gas Commission, that they've got to notify, and it's specified in here, all groundwater permit holders within 1/2 mile of each injection well or the area of review, whichever is larger. Mr. President, the reason I bring this, there are a lot of people that use or draw water from these formations. Oil field service outfits, water trucks, your livestock interests, municipalities, all of those people use water that could be affected by the processes contemplated in this legislation. And because of the rules of the way the Oil and Gas Commission hearings are set up, they are not like a DEQ hearing. The only appeal to one of their hearings is to go to district court, which is very expensive, time-consuming, and somewhat intimidating for just the normal course of business. So people need to know about it. They need to know what's happening to the places that they're drawing their water from. It's precautionary, it's good policy, and also it shines a little bit more sunlight into this process. I would be happy to stand for questions and urge your favorable consideration.
I'm going to call on Senator Scott first, and then we'll let Senator Jennings address it as the sponsor. Go ahead, Senator Scott.
Mr. President, and I'm concerned with the page 3, line 3, change of may to shall. And let me explain my concern. If you read paragraph little I beginning at the bottom of page 2, you're talking about evidence of groundwater in the proposed formation intervals will not be adversely influenced by the injections, and the operations shall at all times be in compliance with applicable groundwater quality regulations and underground injection control program requirements. An applicant may comply with this paragraph by, and the amendment proposes changes that may to shall. As it is written right now, an applicant can comply with the paragraph by one of these two things, but there would be other means that they could comply with the paragraph if they can show sufficient evidence that the groundwater proposed, et cetera, as the language goes. If, as a practical matter, the only two ways they're going to do it are the ones set forth here, then this change from may to shall is relatively inconsequential and harmless. If it's ruling out some other ways that they might demonstrate compliance and comply with the paragraph, then that's a significant amendment. So I'm posing the question to the experts and to the sponsor of the bill, which is it? Do we need a may there so they can comply in some other ways, or is transferring it to shall perfectly all right because these two ways are the only two they're going to do it? So that's, Mr. President, that's my question for the people who know something about this business.
Senator Jennings, sponsor of the bill, would you like to address some of those questions?
Thank you, Mr. President. Amendment. One of the things that we want to do is protect the groundwater. And these technologies, the owners of these technologies both have told us, and through their demonstrations in the lab and in the ground, that it doesn't affect the groundwater. And in the bill, we've said we don't want to degrade it. I think this is a good amendment because it requires the notification of anybody in that area that may be affected. And I would rather have that up front and have everybody on board with this before we go out and try this someplace and have that notification out there. The only regret that I have about this amendment is that we didn't think of it when we were developing the bill. I consider it a very friendly amendment, and I'd hope you vote aye on it.
Other comments in regard to the amendment? Senator Schiffer.
President, for my second time, in response to my colleague from Natrona County, there's only two ways to get one of these. You've got to opt for option A or option B. That's it. So I think it's covered, but you got to go through that process.
Are we ready for the question on the amendment? The question before us is in regard to second reading amendment number 1 to Senate file 11 or Senate file 116. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has passed. There are no further amendments. The question then is, having been read two separate... Go ahead, Senator Rothfuss.
Yesterday, that I would follow up with a little bit of clarifying information for the good senator from Natrona County, and I just wanted to address that. For those who are interested, it does generate carbon dioxide. It's an oxidation process that produces some of the energy. There are a lot more details to it from that, but you start with carbon, hydrogen, and water. You end up with carbon dioxide and methane. That's the long and the short of it. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Rothfuss. Senator Scott.
Mr. President, that then leads to the question as to what happens to the carbon dioxide. Does it remain behind in the formation? Does it come out in a way that can be easily segregated and reinjected or sequestered someplace else if the customers want that or used by our oil and gas industry? I think, Mr. President, the reason for my interest, Mr. President, is that I think this is good evidence for the bill and for the process, and that we may have hit on a way here where we can translate the coal into clean energy, where we're getting rid of a significant portion of the CO2 that would be just released if the coal was simply burned. And that has considerable virtue in terms of our marketing ability for the product down the line. So I think the question of what ultimately happens to the CO2 is important, Mr. President, and I would welcome any input from anybody who knows.
Senator Rossus.
Thank you, Mr. President. Most of the CO2 stays in the formation. Most of it adsorbs, sticks to the coal in the formation. A lot of it is dissolved in the water and will stay in a solvated aqueous state, which means it's going to stay down there. A small amount of it will come up with the natural gas as it pressurizes, but the concentration of the carbon dioxide is going to remain low enough that most of it will actually stay down there. So we're not going to be able to use it, for example, for an enhanced oil recovery project and separate it out. Thank you, Mr. President.
Very interesting. A test will follow. Back on the bill. Is there any further discussion in regard to Senate File 116? Senate File 116 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objections, it's so ordered. Senate Joint Resolution 5, second reading of the Senate Joint Resolution.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, Defense of Marriage Constitutional Amendment, sponsored by Senator Meyer.
There is an amendment, and it is the Meyer Amendment, and I'd ask the reading clerk to read in this amendment at this time.
Senate Joint Resolution 5, second reading amendment number 1, page 2, line 6.
Senator Meyer, would you like to move and address the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move second reading amendment number 1 to SJ5 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. President, in one case, this is primarily just housekeeping. When we changed the actual constitutional amendment, the language in that, we didn't absolutely match up the descriptor language which the Secretary of State uses to describe what the original constitutional amendment did. So what the primary purpose of this amendment is to make that descriptor language match up with the actual language in the constitutional amendment. And the words that we took out was substantially equivalent, and that's the major things. And we matched it up with the defined the benefits. The other thing that we did is that we changed duties to obligations in this amendment, Mr. President. And that was language with the counsel of the good senator from Albany County that actually means what we were trying to say in this. Rather than a duty in a marriage, it would be an obligation, and the same thing as an obligation in all other civil relationships. Rather than duty, it would be obligation. So it's just trying to match up the top and the bottom and changing duties to obligations. And I'd ask the body for their favorable consideration.
Questions, comments in regard to the amendment, Senator Scott?
Mr. President, my only comment is that we're starting to get amendments on amendments here. I would hope the proponents, if this amendment should pass, would get an informal, engrossed version or something else with the amendments all plugged in, so we can very simply read the language that we're actually putting into the Constitution. This is a constitutional amendment, and I think we have to be very careful. And I, for one, Mr. President, would like to know exactly what I'm voting on and have confidence in it, because if there's uncertainty, this one could always come back another session. Being a constitutional amendment, it's going. You can't go to the people next 2 years. So that's I think this is a good amendment, Mr. President. I know part of it is. I hope we adopt it. But I would hope we could get a clear, simple statement of the actual language could be circulated so that we know tomorrow exactly what we're voting on.
Other comments before the sponsor of the amendment rises for the second time? Seeing none other, I guess we'll have Senator Meyer. Would you like to respond?
Thank you. In regards to the suggestion of the good senator from Natrona County, I think that we can have LSO prepare that, and I can have that on your guys' desk certainly well before third reading, and so everybody can look at it. I know exactly what's in, what's out, and I'll try to do that by this afternoon. I think we've got this thing in real good shape as it is right now, barring any other modifications that someone else might want to do. And I would suggest to anyone else, if you are going to make any amendments on this, that you follow the intent and the will of I think, of the good senator from Natrona County. If you make an amendment, have something that's all-inclusive with it, so that tracks in as well, so you know exactly what you're voting on in third reading, if there's any other changes. So you have that type of comparison and that knowledge that you know exactly what you're voting for. And I will do that, Mr. President, and ask LSO to do that.
Thank you, Senator Meyer. Question is in regard to the amendment being second reading amendment number 1 to Senate Joint Resolution number 5. All those in favor of this amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That amendment has been adopted. We are back now on the Senate Joint Resolution. Senator Jennings, do you have comment, please?
Mr. President, I have a question back to the sponsor. I had a question posed to me last night, and I think I answered it right, and I just want to make sure. The question was, under what we're doing here with this amendments and what we're going to end up with the final product, will civil unions from another state be recognized in Wyoming? Or can they be recognized in Wyoming?
Are there other questions before the sponsor? Were there any other questions? Second time. Okay. He spoke twice on the amendment. Yeah. He can speak. We are back on the bill. But there are other questions before you rise. You might want to hear other questions. We are on the bill. Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. President. One further clarification I was interested in hearing is there any possible way, if this amendment goes into effect, that, for example, the Federal Family Medical Leave Act or Social Security benefits could be extended to a civil union? Because my understanding, Mr. President, of the federal law indicates that if we define marriage, even if we have civil unions, we're not going to be able to define ourselves into federal coverage under the federal statute. So, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, I'd appreciate clarification on that as well with this.
Other questions of the sponsor of the bill? Seeing none, Senator Meyer, would you like to address those questions at this time, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. The last question first, the Family Medical Leave Act and federal statutes. I would say that to give you an answer that I would feel comfortable with, I would have to do some research on that. At first blush, I would say that we have some amendments that are constitutional amendments defining what we will and will not accept as far as federal medical statutes. And so I think there's some interplay with that, with some other things that are out in the system. So whatever answer I do give you, those may change the circumstances in that. So with that caveat, I will get some information to find out specifically if we can the answer to your questions on that. As far as the discussion about whether or not this would allow us or not allow us to recognize civil unions from other states as marriage. At this point in time, I would say no. And subsequent acts by this legislature, if we defined another relationship that was substantially similar to marriage, then I would have to say after that, which may or may not occur, then the possibility would exist that they may be recognized. And so the door is open, but it's not, but it's closed today. So if does that do you have an understanding about where we're at? Because what we said is that they may be different, but we did not say that they couldn't be the same. So that's what the second part of the language that was passed yesterday does. And so at this point in time, no, they can't be, because we said only marriage would be valid and recognized. So we won't recognize them as marriage, but they might be recognized if we have a civil relationship statute. They could be recognized as a civil relationship, but they would not be recognized as marriage. The only way they could possibly be argued to be authorized as marriage, that if a subsequent legislature passed a bill that said marriage, comma, civil relationship. And in that case, the courts may say, well, indeed, a civil relationship is substantially equivalent to marriage. And so I think that would explain what could happen in the future. Where it is today, the answer is no. They won't be recognized as marriage, and no, they won't be recognized as a civil relationship, because we do not have civil relationships on the books in Wyoming today.
Other questions on the bill? Seeing none, Senate Joint Resolution 5, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do you have a consent list? Yes, Senator Dockstetter.
Here with this transition to have privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. President and members of the Senate, I'd like to point out to you, to my left, joining us in the gallery today, the program directors for domestic violence and sexual assault for the entire state of Wyoming, and among them, our own Chris Thompson of Lincoln County. Could we have the program directors please stand and be acknowledged by the Senate?
Thank you, and welcome to the Senate. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, do we have a consent list?
Mr. President, we do have a consent list. Third reading consent list for today is as follows. Senate File 65, Animal Remedies. Senate File 67, Guardianship and Wards, Sealed Records. Senate File 81, Omnibus Water Bill Construction. Senate File 86, Agricultural Fuel Tax Exemption. Senate File 99, Sales Tax on Certain Food Items. Senate File 112, National Guard Billeted Soldiers Fund. And Senate Joint Resolution 6, Resolution Environmental Protection Agency Regulations.
Thank you. Would anyone like any of the bills removed from the consent list? Senator Nicholas.
President, Senate File 86, Agricultural Fuel Tax Exemption.
Are there any other requests for removal of? Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the Senate? Senate File 65, Senate File 67, Senate File 81, Senate File 99, Senate File 112, Senate Joint Resolution, Senate Joint 6. The reading clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard.
Aye.
Bebout.
Aye.
Burns.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Case.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Christensen.
Aye.
Coe.
Aye.
Cooper.
Aye.
Dockstader.
Aye.
Driscoll.
Aye.
Emmerich.
Aye.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Geis.
Aye.
Hastert.
Aye.
Hicks.
Aye.
Hines.
Aye.
Jennings.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
Meyer.
Aye.
Nicholas.
Aye.
Nutting.
Aye.
Perkins.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Ross.
Aye.
Rothfuss.
Aye.
Schiffer.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Bonslatern.
Aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
On the consent list, 30 ayes. Senate File 65. Are there any changes? Case I to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 65. 29 ayes, 1 no. Senate File 67. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 67. 30 ayes. Senate File 81. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 81. 30 ayes. Senate File 99. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 99. 30 ayes. Senate File 112. Are there any changes? Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate File 112. 30 ayes. Senate Joint Resolution 6. Are there any changes?
Rothfuss,
aye to no. Case, aye to no. Close. Hastert, aye to no. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. Senate Joint Resolution 6. 27 ayes, 3 noes.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 65, Senate File 67, Senate File 81, Senate File 99, Senate File 112, Senate Joint Resolution 6 have passed the Senate. Other bills on third reading. Senate File 86, third reading of the Senate file.
Senate File 86, Agricultural Fuel Tax Exemption and Acts Relating to Taxation and Revenue, sponsored by Senator Meyer. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Ladies and gentlemen, I asked to have this taken off just to talk about a little bit. You know, it seems to me that if somebody wants to come down and ask the legislature for money, it ought to be hard. These are taxpayer dollars. We all have to pay taxes. We all have to pay our fair share. And if you want to have an exemption and you're entitled to an exemption, fair enough. But it shouldn't be easy. It's something you have to go through the exercise every year. Here we are sitting now having a discussion about, with respect to Medicaid recipients, how often should they have to recertify themselves to become eligible? And there's a lot of discussion that they ought to have to, or some criticism with the notion that you could certify yourself once and then be eligible throughout the year, even though your financial circumstances might be changed. And there are people out there that say, you know, if you want those benefits, it shouldn't be easy. You should have to go through an exercise to demonstrate that you qualify, and you should have to do it regularly. And it seems to me that if that is your philosophy, you think that people that want to get benefits from the government should have to go through a process, and it shouldn't be easy, And if you want tax relief because you're using your vehicles off-road, fair enough. But you have to go through the process regularly. Circumstances change. Things are different. And it shouldn't be easy. And so it's here we all, it's fine if we all sit here and say together, well, we're all ag guys. It should be easier. Well, then tomorrow you say, well, we're all teachers. It ought to be easy. It seems to me everybody should have to go through the hurdles. Everybody should have to go hard. And these things shouldn't be just something you walk in and say, sign me up and I don't have to pay my share of my taxes.
Senator Schiffer.
Mr. President, I too rise and hope you'll look at this bill very carefully. And understand I am in the agricultural business. I can get one of these. But understand what the window does. It means that that at some point somebody can check out of ag, and they're actually still eligible for that exemption. You might get your money back. You probably won't, the money that's owed to the state when they transfer. And the second thing is that it seems to me that when we look at how we're actually using this, the system may not be the greatest system, and we can deal with that somewhere else. But opening this type of window, there's no end to it. It means that we as a state can no longer track accurately these exemptions, and that's wrong. These are subsidies. Make no mistake about it, this bill deals with a subsidy, and we should know year to year just how big the subsidy is that we are giving under this tax exemption or any other tax exemption, because they are just like us, this legislature, appropriating money to the people who qualify for this. We look at appropriations very carefully. This is one of the few ways we can track is having that annual process and say, we know we're making an appropriation to these ag operators. Let's see how big it is, and let's make sure it's accountable. I urge you to vote this bill down.
Senator Scott?
Mr. President, you can vote the bill up or vote the bill down, depending on what you think of the length of time involved here. But let me suggest, first, I think it's wrong to call this a subsidy. The fuel tax is dedicated by Constitution, Article 15, Section 6, to the support of the highway. And not supposed to be used for other purposes. The point in the exemptions, and there's ag and there's construction and other, they are off-road use. They do not represent use on the highways. And the thought is that the tax is basically a user fee and should not be taken from people for use that is not on the highways. So I do not view it as a subsidy. I view it as implementing the intent of the Constitution in dedicating the fuel tax revenues to the support of the highways. We're doing it on a user fee type basis. The other principle involved here, which is more directly on the point of the bill, Mr. President, is that we ought to be efficient in our government operations and the burdens of compliance that puts on the public. And the thought is that you've got a relatively stable community here. If your circumstances change, the bill requires you to say so. But that there's no point in the annual renewal because there is enough stability here that you simply don't get enough change to make it worth the burden. That's a matter of judgment. And if you feel that there isn't enough stability here, that there's enough change, that it's worth the extra burden you've put on both the state government and the producers than an annual or a lesser time period makes sense. If you say, no, we aren't going to get anything extra in the way of meaningful tax revenue as a result, that people will comply, and if they go out of ag, they won't use their ag exemption, then the bill is justified. I think that's the judgment that you need to make. And I think comparing it to, I think you have the same issue, Mr. President, with regard to the Medicaid example that was cited, but it's a very different circumstance as to what kind of a turnover you're going to expect in the eligibility, whether it's the same judgment. Should we require a more frequent, because there will be a big turnover, and you will have a bunch of people not eligible. But it's basically the same judgment with a different circumstance and potentially a different answer.
Thank you. Senator Netting.
Thank you, Mr. President. Being an ag person, I say right up front, my knowledge of this is very limited. But we are going to be discussing this topic again. HB, House Bill 153.
Senator Nutting, I would caution you about making references to bills or action in the other House.
If they have
we will address it. By rule cannot address other actions of the other House. Senator Case.
Mr. President, thank you. I rise in opposition to this bill. You know, the question about whether this is a subsidy or not hinges on whether or not the 70% is correct. And what we've done is we've kind of had this inherent blessing of this 70%, like it's some kind of magic number. It's been our law for a long time. This bill maintains the 70%, but it extends the period of applying for 4 years, so you don't really come back and even revisit the eligibility. It's the 70%, I think, that's way out of date. And it was just, you know, as a compromise, or I'm not even sure where that number came from. But, you know, to think that 70% of the gasoline in these operations is used for off-road use, I find that a little hard to take. And I think it's probably time that we explored a new system. And indeed, if it's not 70%, if it's overwhelmingly different than 70%, and I'm guessing it's much less than 70%, Mr. President, then we do have a constitutional issue, and it is a subsidy.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm actually reluctantly in favor of the bill. What you have is the discussion here is somewhat was the discussion we had in the committee. Ultimately, what it comes down to is whether the system really works or not. This bill doesn't particularly affect that system. It doesn't address the 70%. It doesn't do a number of things. But what I can tell you the real impacts, the only reason that I'm going to vote in favor of this bill is there. What the annual requirement is that this takes, and the testimony that was there was when they lost three positions in the freeze a couple years ago, and it's made it very difficult for the department to process these applications on a timely basis. The only reason I'm voting for this bill, because I think the system's broken and needs to be fixed, but the only reason I'm voting for this bill is because this decompresses the workload and I think helps stop the growth of government. You have a problem where you have actual clerks have to process these every year. They've got to go through it every year, and right now they can't do it on time because they don't have enough personnel. So the only reason I'm voting for this bill, in furtherance of this broken system, is simply because it goes to the efficient use of government. If you don't do this, you have governments who is tasked with doing a job they now, by their testimony, don't have the positions for. And talking with a number of the producers and the delinquency with which a lot of these forms are filed, it seems to have at least some merit that these are not being processed and paid out in a timely fashion. So the only reason I'm voting for it is because of the workload compression that staggering this out over 4 years can cause in that regard. But this is certainly an issue it's time to address in depth, and I would hope that either committee-wise or individually we'd start to look at this system and revolve it. But this particular bill is not going to fix that system, but it would reduce the workload compression for the department.
Senator Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
nice comments, good center to the left. I'd like to clear up a couple misconceptions that have kind of come about on it. As a user of it, which I have for many years, to get the 70%, you actually, on the form, which has a, like a lot of other documents we sign, it's got very strict penalties if you don't follow it on the bottom of it. So there is a means, if you don't follow it, for the state to come through. They make you list all your vehicles on the ranch, whatever you have, whatever you drive, and how you do it. And they look at that form. That's part of what takes them the time to do this. They look at the form and decide whether you qualify for that level or if you qualify at all. Secondly, for a huge part of ranches anymore, particularly the ones that are close to anything, we buy fuel cheaper in town than we can buy it at the ranch, even with the discount. So for us, the fuel that I use for gas on my ranch is nearly all goes into four-wheelers, motorcycles, stuff that you use flat on the ground that never, ever sees anywhere near a highway. And they are correct. This is not a subsidy in any fashion. This merely meets the statute in the state of Wyoming that says if you're not using your vehicle on the road, you shouldn't have to pay the tax that is specifically for that. And this just simplifies the process for the 4 years. It doesn't take you off the hook. It doesn't mean any other end of it. They still can come after you. I would like to hear one example, if anybody knows, of somebody that's quit an operation and continued to use it, because the permit is tied to the tanks on your ranch. So if you're not ranching anymore, you're not getting the certificate, and it's tied to a bulk dealer, our dealer. It doesn't go to, I can't just bring fuel out and get it. My local dealer is the one that deals with this certificate. So he knows, if I'm not in the ranch business anymore, he's not putting himself on the line either. Thank you.
Senator Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, would you pause? Senator Schiffer, I'm having difficulty here getting this to turn on. I'm sure you're not on the live feed.
There. Probably that's just as well, Mr. President.
Now you may repeat yourself if you so desire.
Mr. President, I was responding to my colleague from over in the northeast corner of the state. I'm from Johnson County, and since 1892, we do not rat out our neighbors, both because it may cost us our life and because we're probably related to them.
Yeah, it's only one. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to respond to some of the questions, and some of my other colleagues for responding to them, I think that what this bill was really brought about, it was that one of the number one issues of the stock growers, and of course they're a special interest group, and the rest of the farm community and ag community does support this. But I was going to pull this bill off myself because I felt the pressure of another special interest group in the periscoping back, and I saw the torpedo wake coming. So I think we needed to discuss this bill to find out exactly what it does do. And it does substantially cut down the burdens of paperwork. There are other ways to address some of the inequities in this particular process. And those other ways that may be coming forward substantially increases the burden of paperwork. It depends on who you want to look at that, who does the paperwork, and how much. This bill would say that the agriculturalist has one form, and it is a much more involved form than it had been in the past because people wanted to make sure that this fuel was used off-road. So that has been substantially more burdensome in the form and the process itself to qualify. And that is one of the reasons why I think we've had some delinquencies, and one of the reasons why some of the ag producers have been out there on their tractor seat or on their four-wheeler and couldn't get fuel delivered to their facilities or to their bulk plant because their certificate wasn't there. And it wasn't there because it wasn't with their bulk supplier, and their bulk supplier says, well, I can't deliver you anything. And then it'll take you a long time to get that certificate. And so you're faced with some interesting choices at that point in time, and you do pay a lot more for fuel delivered. There's no doubt about it than you do at the gas pumps. But this will reduce the paperwork substantially. It'll help the department as far as the work process. The $10,000 is really the big thing as far as what changes, as far as circumstances, and if they change, you have to change along with them. You can no longer benefit from this. So this is really a big issue out there with the agricultural people, and this is a way to tackle it. It helps the department. It doesn't cost the state anymore. You can track them because those dollars are going to be coming out. It's going to be a lot easier to figure out who is actually qualifying for it now than it is post this bill. So the tracking isn't a problem. It isn't a subsidy. The implementation is easier, and it saves the state potentially money and positions. So I think it's a good bill, and they ask for your support.
There's a question. Senate File 86, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll, please.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout?
Aye.
Burns?
No.
Case?
No.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquibel?
No.
Geis? Hastert? Hicks? Hines? Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss? Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
Aye.
Closing vote?
What?
Hicks, aye to no. Closing vote? Closing?
Barnard, aye to no.
Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 14 ayes, 16 noes.
Senate File 86. Having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the Senate, Senate File 86 has failed to pass the Senate. General File. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business for the consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried. Senator Bebout.
Committee Hall, please come to order. The first bill for consideration is Senate File 25. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 25, Long-Term Services and Support, an act relating to the Wyoming Long-Term Care Choices Act, sponsored by Senator Martin.
Senator Scott.
I've got the... It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Schiffer, and Scott. Excuse Senator Nutting. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flatern, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Heard the reading of the Senate file with your pleasure. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to all rise to do so with a recommendation that Senate File 25 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment from the first standing committee. I ask it be read in at this time.
Senate File 25, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment is relatively simple. We're talking about these organizations, the ADRCs, they're called. We ask in selecting locations, the Department of Health, instead of consider the degree of local community support, we're going to ask that they require a degree of local community support or a contribution of local funding. That's what the first part of the amendment does. The second part seeks, and there's a report that's due back, it seeks to include in the report the dollar value of local contributions and the dollar value of cost avoidance that these ADRCs produce. The design is that the ADRC will be able to divert clients from the very high-cost nursing home in Medicaid and save us money that way by, when a family has a crisis, being able to get them dealt with without having to send the family member to the nursing home if that's appropriate. And it should result in some cost avoidance, so we want them to quantify it. Mr. Chairman, there may be some limits in how much they can quantify it, but I still think it will be quite useful. That's what the Standing Committee Amendment does. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the Standing Committee Amendment and urge its adoption.
Ready to question? Question being called for. You're voting on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 of Senate File 25. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That Standing Committee Amendment has passed. We have another one with the reading clerk.
Chairman,
please read it.
May I ask that the amendment from Committee Number 2 be read in at this time?
Reading clerk, please read that in.
Senate File 25, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 4.
Senator Nicholas.
Number 2 to Senate File 25. Folks, if you take a look at the fiscal note, you'll see that it's a little bit in conflict. You have an appropriation requested of $500,000, and you'll see that it's in a 600 series grants and aid. So grants and aid series, when you see that, that means you give the money to the agencies. They go out and contract with third parties to expend these dollars. If you go down into the text of the description of the appropriation, it talks about employing 5 full-time positions statewide. And when the committee heard this, I don't think anybody believes that these services should not be provided. I think the frustration a little bit with respect to these is, given all of the resources that we're funding through senior centers, through a variety of state aid to a variety of entities, why can't we just educate and teach people how to provide this information so that when these folks go looking for services, they go to existing facilities? So we have facilities in town that deal with that we provide lots of funding for disabled folks. We have facilities that we're funding that deal with the aging for senior centers. And it seems to us that let's reduce the appropriation, go more slowly, and let's focus on maybe taking a look at the institutions we're already funding, an education process to get those folks who are already tied into these populations to help them navigate these issues. We don't deny that it's sometimes tough to navigate, but if you just walk through your community, you'll see a lot of institutions already dedicated to helping disabled folks, and the same is true for seniors, and we think there's a less expensive way to handle this. Thank you.
Further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2? Ready for the question? Question being called for. All in favor of Standing Committee Amendment 2 to Senate File 25, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That amendment has passed. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to the principal sponsor of the bill, Senator Martin, for an explanation of the Senate file.
Senator Martin. Senator Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 25, Long-Term Services and Support, to the body for their consideration. Mr. Chairman, Aging and Disability Resource Centers offer accurate, unbiased information and assistance to the public on most aspects of life related to aging and or living with a disability. ADRCs provide personalized and consumer-friendly assistance to empower consumers to make informed decisions about their long-term care service options. ADRCs create a single, streamlined, and coordinated system to serve individuals, concerned families, friends, or professionals working with issues related to aging and or disabilities. Information is specifically tailored to each person's situation and to the community's needs. ADRC services can be provided in a physical location, via telephone, online, or through home visit, whichever is the most convenient for the person seeking help. ADRCs also can reduce the duplication of services. The key function of ADRCs is to provide a coordinated and early intervention approach that connects the public to supports and services such as information and awareness, options counseling, streamlined access, person-centered discharge planning, quality assurance and evaluation, referrals, benefits counseling, planning for future long-term care needs, comprehensive assessments and various program eligibility determinations, and one-stop access to public programs. The ADRC staff is highly trained in the entire continuum of long-term services and programs, and would dedicate the time needed for each client. The staff offers accurate, unbiased information and assistance to the public so that consumers can make informed decisions about their long-term care needs or options. Wyoming lacks a one-stop shop for long-term services and support information for both the aging and disability communities. Presently, Mr. Chairman, 43 states now have ADRCs and are seeing significant cost savings for individuals and governments. Mr. Chairman, I'd be glad to walk through the bill if that is fine with you.
Proceed.
Mr. Chairman, starting on page 1, section 1, lines 8 through 10, creates Wyoming Statute 426-109, Aging and Disability Resource Centers. Page 1, lines 12 through 14, subsection A authorizes the Wyoming Department of Health to use competitive grants and contracts to fund a statewide network of aging and disability resource centers. Page 2, lines 1 through 8, subsection B states that the Department of Health Aging Division shall determine the locations of the aging disability resource center. And then at that point, the standing committee amendment would fit in. Page 2, lines 10 through 20, subsection C, states that the purpose of each center shall be to create a single coordinated system of information and assistance for all persons seeking long-term support. Each center shall assist eligible persons in making informed decisions about health care access and long-term care services and support options, and shall serve as a referral agency to long-term care support systems. Page 2, line 22 and 23, subsection D, authorizes the department to adopt rules and regulations to implement this section. Page 3, lines 1 through 6, subsections E, states that the Department of Health and Aging Division shall provide an annual report beginning October 1st, 2011, to the Joint Labor, Health, and Social Service Interim Committee and to the Joint Appropriations Interim Committee concerning the implementation of the ADRCs as provided in this section. page 3, lines 8 through 22, section 2, would appropriate $500,000 from the general fund to the Department of Health. The appropriation shall be for the period beginning with the effective date of this act and ending June 30th, 2012. It also states the appropriation shall only be expended for the purpose of funding and administering aging and disability resource centers pursuant to Wyoming Statute 426109. Page 3, line 24, section 3, and continuing on page 4 with subsection A, lines 2 through 5, states that Wyoming Statute 426109, subsection D, created by this act, and section 2 of this act are effective immediately. And subsection B, page 4, lines 7 of, and 8, state that the remainder of the act is effective July 1. Mr. Chairman, I would try to answer questions at this point in time. And if not, I guess we would move forward with the...
Questions? We have a committee of the whole amendment. Will the reading clerk please read that in?
Senate File 25, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 5.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I would move, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25 and ask for the body's favorable consideration. Mr. Chairman, this goes into subsection B on page 2. On line 5, subsection B talks about the locations of aging and disability resource centers. And it says that it shall be determined by the Department of Health. Now, we had quite a little bit of discussion about locations and the need for this particular bill. And I kind of had a problem with the Department of Health making that determination without a little guidance. Most of the people in the communities know where the seniors centers are, and we're primarily dealing with senior issues and disability issues. And it may be that we come back on second reading and modify this to talk about some of the disability centers that are in the communities, too, as far as priorities. But what this amendment does is says that the department consults with and gives priority to local senior center and require a degree of local community support for a center in funding or in kind. And so the senior centers have to buy into it. They have to provide some space. Senior centers are really good at getting local community support. They've got a lot of bake sales and different things that they put on to get their money. And so we're trying to get the disability and resource centers tied into current assets that we have in our community, so we don't have that duplication of efforts. Senior centers are doing a lot of the same things that the ADRC is trying to do. The ADRC, I think, is going to be very effective in getting some data and developing a database for some of the assets and some of the areas where the seniors and the disabled people can get some help. But the senior centers in a lot of areas are already doing that. They're not really doing it in Social Security benefits and other areas like that. ADRC folks might have an edge on them in that regard. But we want to try to minimize the duplication of effort because we are putting a lot of money out into these different areas and these different programs. Every senior center can't do everything the ADRC folks can do, but there's a lot of them out there that are doing a lot which they're doing. So I kind of looked at this bill as the camel's nose under the tent, and I wanted to say, well, maybe we ought to have the camel go where the rest of the camels are to start with. So that's why I bring this amendment, Mr. Chairman. And I think it's a good match. I think ADRC and senior centers are a hand-in-glove fit in many circumstances. And if the senior centers would provide that community support, I think they should have the priority, and I'd ask for your favorable consideration.
Further discussion on the amendment. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I would urge the Senate to be a little cautious about where this amendment is, which tent it's leading us to. Mr. Chairman, in my community, the closest senior center is 90 miles round trip. The other senior center in my community is 160 miles round trip. The idea behind this program is not bricks and mortar. It has nothing to do with bricks and mortar. It has to do with getting information out. Senior centers distribute information. They do a great job. But if you start talking about it has to be prioritized to a building in a town 90 miles away, we're taking the wrong approach on this. It is saying, get the information to the people that need it. Senior centers know how to get information out? Sure. That's what they do. But don't confine it to the concept of bricks and mortar. Confine it. You're going to get a contractor that's going to figure out all sorts of ways, including be involved with senior centers. Now, there's no way that contractor is going to overcome the influence of all of our mothers and grandmothers. It's not going to happen. They're going to listen to them. But do not, I urge you, resist this. This isn't about bricks and mortar. This is about the flow of information, the ability to find a very, very competent person, whether I may want to consult with somebody in Rock Springs. This, what this program does is empowers me to do that so they can tell me how to apply for the Rancher's Retirement Fund or whatever it is I'm qualified for. So I would urge you to resist this. This is information. It isn't bricks and mortar. And I think we should encourage along the line of information only.
For the discussion on the amendment. You ready for the question?
Nanny bill.
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, if that's the case, maybe I'll bring, I wish you would vote for this, and then I'll bring a second reading amendment that deletes all of subsection B, because it says locations of aging and disability resource centers. And location. I think this is an opportunity to make sure that seniors know where to go that get that information, that data, and that's where they go practically every day, and that's through the senior centers. Now, there might be a reason why you don't have a senior center in some circumstances that are within 100 miles of each other. There's probably not enough seniors to support it. And so does it make sense to put a ADRC location to get information in a place where there's not even enough seniors to support a senior center? Well, I report to you that it doesn't make much sense to do that. So this just basically just says that this is where they go. Now, there's a lot to ADRCs, but I believe this shouldn't be about bricks and mortar, and it shouldn't be about contractors. We've already got locations out there, and we've got the seniors there, and you're just trying to put one together with the other.
For the discussion, Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, I think that explanations of the two proposed amendments is very good. It comes at it totally in two different directions, and I think it's really a policy decision of the body as to what you would like to see take place with the ADRCs. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll sit down.
Senator Dockstader, did you wish to? Further discussion on amendment? Question being called for. We're voting on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 25. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
That amendment has failed. Division being called for. All in favor of Standing Committee Amendment or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please stand.
Seven.
Those opposed, please stand.
One.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 at Senate File 25 has failed. Back on the bill, further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, briefly on and for the bill, what we're really talking about here is the kind of decision that probably all of us either have faced or are going to face at some point. Aging, presuming somebody doesn't die of something else suddenly, aging tends to be characterized by progressive intermittent frailty, where the individual gradually becomes more and more frail, gradually becomes less and less able to care for themselves in their own home. And often there, what happens is at some point there is a crisis. You have a fall and a broken hip. You have somebody develops a disease. Somebody who's in a assisted living perhaps gets more frail, and the assisted living says, we won't take care of them anymore. You've got to do something else right now. And I've had some experience personally with the older generations in our family. The first time it happened to us, it happened pretty suddenly. We got the call, we've got to move him right now to the nursing home. He can't stay here any longer. And frankly, Mr. Chairman, we had no idea what the options were and no really good place to turn to find out in a hurry. And you can get that same call from the hospital discharge planner, because they don't want them in the hospital very long anymore. They want them moved out into a nursing home right now. And these centers can provide a very valuable resource to a family with that kind of a sudden, what do we do now, where they haven't had the prior experience, where they don't know what the options are, and can result in a lot of people that may go to a nursing home briefly for a rehab stay, but then they can be moved to a home or to an apartment or some other less restrictive living environment that will be a good deal cheaper for us, because you know we pay the bills for two-thirds of the people in nursing homes in the Medicaid program, and will be a lot better for the individuals involved because they will be in a less restrictive environment, Mr. Chairman. And I don't ever recall, Mr. Chairman, meeting somebody who really wanted to leave their home and go to a nursing home. You don't want to do that until you absolutely have to. So this is a very useful mechanism for helping people dealing with that kind of a sudden problem in their family where they haven't had time to research what all the options are, know what really is practical, haven't had the experience. And I think it will be a big help. I think it will reduce our nursing home expenditures in our Medicaid program, and I think it will enable quite a number of our senior citizens in particular to be cared for in a good deal friendlier, less restrictive environment. So I would urge adoption of the bill.
Senator Burns.
In the description I've heard of these supposed centers, and going on, unless he was mistaken, going on what the good senator from Johnson County was describing this is the idea behind this is to convey information out to those resources that are available to the senior citizens of this state, which to me sounds like the exact same mission of the Veterans Commission, only in their case for veterans. So I'm wondering if there was any discussion in any of the committees about the idea of either expanding the Veterans Commission to take in non-veterans, or by setting this up, incorporating the Veterans Commission into this particular agency or network, because it seems like they're doing the same thing. They are a source of information to get out there to let these people know what services are available to them, both federally and statewide.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm following up on that same issue. This is what I read what I see when I get to this bill is two things. One is there's no question this information needs to be out there. And I take my fellow senator from the Turner County's word when he says that ultimately these types of things will save the state money, save the taxpayers money. And I'm all for that. But when I read this bill, what I see is the creation or the continuation of a cottage industry of independently funded organizations and contracts. If you go to the appropriation, though, what we're allowing for is five full-time positions. Well, my understanding is those full-time positions are already out there because this is currently a federal government program that's federally funded. and that looking at the fiscal note, the cost of aging and disability resource centers services are being covered by a federal administration on aging grant and is expected to expire at the end of fiscal year 2012. So here we've got a federal program that now is going to become a state program. That's one thing I see. But the other one I see is, and I appreciate, and if there's a way, sometimes I understand the concept that you have to spend a little bit of money to get in a situation where you can save money. But ultimately what I see in here is a bill that comes out at $500,000. Appropriations has reduced it to $200,000. But when it rolls out in the biennium, it may very well roll out at $1 million. If the real cost is $500,000 a year, it may really roll out at $1 million in the biennium. And I'm wondering, at what point in time do we see the return on this, and when can we reduce, or when will this become revenue neutral, if at all, instead of just another expansion of a governmental program?
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, the frustration that I get when I take a look at these things, and you have agencies coming in and promoting more positions to advertise their services, is that I think is that we sat here just in the last discussion, we've talked about hospitals, we've talked about nursing homes, we've talked about veterans commissions, we've talked about senior centers, and we can add in the ARC regional services, those, so we have all of these institutions receiving hundreds of millions of dollars from our budgets, from the state taxpayer, and the suggestion is that when you go to a hospital that receives millions of dollars of Medicaid services from the taxpayer, that they're not capable or qualified or they don't have the information to help people navigate these issues. So we have a Department of Health, and my question is if you know that there's an issue with respect about communication of information, why wouldn't you go to the institutions that you already fund, where people go to services and insist that collect the information and insist that they provide information? Why do we have to continue to create new institutions to help hospitals or do services a hospital should be doing? If we're going to send the money out, I think it's a great idea. The information ought to be collected, but I think we ought to insist that the people that receive monies from the state government properly advise people and be qualified. Do training, do exercises. And the suggestion that you can't navigate this without a new institution is a little bit disappointing.
Further discussion, Senator Dockstetter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, that was a yes in the committee. I said I doubted whether I would support it on the floor, but I felt like we needed to bring it down here for discussion, and that's what we're seeing now. I looked at this situation. I said, are we getting this help already? Shouldn't we be getting this help from our senior centers? Shouldn't we be getting this help from our families? Shouldn't we be getting this help from our friends? Shouldn't we be getting this help from some of our faith-based groups and organizations? The help is already there. We've always figured it out in Wyoming without some type of organization or an institution because we've helped our families. I also have experience with aging parents losing two of them just in the past 4 years. And as we got them to that point where they needed assistance, assistance that would come from this Aging and Disability Resource Center, my siblings and myself, we figured it out on our own. We didn't have to turn to a center. Made some phone calls, talked to enough people, and we found the resources that we needed without going to some type of program or organization that would cost the taxpayer more dollars. And so that's why I stand opposed to it.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, let me respond to several of the points here. With regard to the Veterans Commission, yes, they do, I believe, do some of that work with regard to veterans, but I think it would be inappropriate to reach beyond veterans, and the majority of the people involved in this are not veterans. Frequently, it's women that have not served in the military. Second, with regard to the existing institutions, Mr. Chairman, you've got to look at the motivations that those existing institutions have. The hospital discharge planners, they're interested in getting them out of the hospital just as quick as they can relates to the way Medicare reimburses things. And they're perfectly happy to suggest the nursing home. That takes care of them just fine. The nursing homes, they've got their own marketing needs if they're below capacity. The way our system works is fair incentive to get up to capacity. You really can't rely on that institution that we fund. The others, it's a little more complicated knowing which is the appropriate institution or arrangement. And you'd need somebody that's independent, that isn't out marketing a service, so that you have a better understanding. If the problem comes on you gradually, and I've seen that, I've had that happen in my family, then there's plenty of time. You can make some calls, you can talk to the assisted living, you can talk to the home and community-based providers. They're a little harder to find, but you can find them. You can talk to the nursing homes. You can get a good understanding yourself of what the options are. The trouble is, a lot of these things happen to you suddenly. You get the call, and you got to do something now or within 24 or 48 hours. And that's where the ADRCs, having had the experience to be able to know what are the possibilities, that's where they can be a big help. And that's where I think this will help our senior citizens and help the state find least restrictive and also the cheapest way to take care of some of these people.
Further discussion? Ready for the question? Question being called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 25, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay.
No.
That bill has failed.
Division.
Division being called for. All in favor, please stand. Go ahead and keep counting. All those in favor, please stand.
15.
All opposed, please stand. Senate File 25 has passed Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
To rise and sit again.
Heard the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I think that clears the desk.
Mr. President. I move that the Senate stand in recess until 2 p.m.
Are there any announcements? Senator Bebout?
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet in 15 minutes after the noon recess up in S-18. To continue the discussion on Senate File 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions 2, Senate File 105, State Control of Certain Land, and if time allows, Senate File 121, Performance-Based Evaluation and Design.
Other announcements? Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning up in S-14. There will be a revised schedule for the meeting, but we will be taking up Senate File 109, State Parks Temporary Peace Officers. Senate File, we'll finish up Senate File 80, Game and Fish Complementary Licenses. We will take up Senate File 148, which I can't remember the name of right now. I'll make an announcement upon adjournment. And Senate File 85, Game and Fish Violations Penalties.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your Corporations Committee number 7 will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. in room S-19 at the top of the stairs. We will be taking up the following bills: Senate File 113, Surveyors and Engineers Practice Act Revisions; Senate File 141, Constitutional Instruction for Officials 2; Senate Joint Resolution 4, Constitutional Instruction for Elected and Other Persons. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet at 1 o'clock this afternoon to consider Senate File 91, Wildlife Livestock Disease Research Partnership Funding. The committee will then meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. to consider the following Senate files: Senate File 50, Medicaid Option Study, it's a re-referral; Senate File 102, Medicaid Costs Study, a re-referral; Senate File 107, Energy Impacted County Roads Program; Senate File 117, Wyoming Reclamation and Restoration Center. And as is always the case, we'll then, if we don't finish those up in the morning, we'll consider them at noon. If we don't finish them at noon, we'll take them in the evening.
Other announcements? Other announcements? Seeing none, you've heard the motion from the majority floor leader. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The Senate shall stand recessed until 2 p.m. this afternoon.